This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchin. We are taping this during Monday Night Football, so the two of us do have the Lions-Packers game on in the background. Detroit's currently up 10-0, and some interesting scores coming out of some of these games over the last couple of days. Some good upsets, but no upsets in New England. The Patriots just keep on humming along here. Obviously beat the New York Giants on Thursday night. That game, we're going to cover some things from that game, I'm sure, but we're mostly going to try to think about some bigger picture things and kind of use this mini bye week to reflect inward and go from there. But we wanted to start off the top of the show, Adam, with some news. Obviously, Ben Watson's back in the mix. We talked about this at length last week when we thought that he was going to be activated from his suspension, and that whole thing kind of went haywire. So we don't need to get too deep into it. If you want to go listen to our analysis of what Watson brings, just go listen to last week's pod. But I do think it's interesting that Bill Belichick said they didn't have a roster spot for him. The second a roster spot opens up, he's back in the mix now.
Yeah, I think it tells you something about their current tight ends. Yeah. And I think he's, you know, he's obviously not in the prime of his career, but he's an improvement of what they got.
Yeah.
And so you'll take that. You need extra weapons in the passing game badly right now. He's an experienced guy. I don't expect him to come right out of the gate and be dominant. You know, I don't expect him to be dominant, period. But he gives you another weapon. He gives you maybe even a better blocker. So I think it's just a positive. It's a positive move in terms of, you know, we knew at some point. We knew when he was going to come back and everything, but we didn't know exactly what the other tight ends were going to bring. We have a better understanding of that now, and I think, you know, I think everybody can agree this is a good thing.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that Lacoste can't stay on the field. He's going to be out for another couple of weeks with an MCL sprain. So he can't stay on the field. He's got the ankle issue. He's got a knee issue now. And he's been in and out of the lineup. So that hurts a lot. And then Izzo, for as much as you don't want to pile on a player that was a seventh-round pick and is truly in his rookie season this year because he didn't play last year, he's just been really kind of a minus for them in both phases of the game, as a pass catcher and as a blocker, but mostly as a blocker is, I think, probably the more important element of this. And Ben Watson is not a career great blocker, right? He's not coming in here with the reputation of being a Rob Gronkowski or someone like this who's going to come in and dominate in the running game as a blocker. But I think just being serviceable and kind of bringing some professionalism to that position and some blocking ability and some strength at the point of attack, that's the biggest thing that you see with Izzo, is every single time they try to use him as kind of a key component of the run scheme, whether it's an outside zone run or something off the edge or something like that, he just gets pushed back and the whole thing just continues to get slowed down. And he's got Sony Michel running into his back time and time again. And there's just no movement there. Whereas I think with Watson, you would hope at least to have some serviceability there and have him be able to move some guys backwards and move some guys off the ball. Again, I don't think that he's going to be a featured element of your running game. He's not going to come in here and be Gronk and all of a sudden they're running blocking schemes where he's getting two guys or they're running right behind him or they're using him as kind of a move option in the blocking game. But I think that he's going to bring some serviceability to that spot. The other big news, which I think is bigger than Ben Watson, is that first round pick N'Keal Harry is eligible to practice this week for the Patriots. And it certainly sounds like the expectation is that he's going to be out there at practice on Tuesday and kind of start that clock of that designated to return where he can return as soon as week 9 to the actual game field. So this is great news for the Patriots, I think.
It is. And I think you start the process now of finding what he does best. You want to get him knowledgeable to everything, but he's a rookie. It's a difficult system. There's so much trust involved with Brady. We've talked about this a lot, especially like, you know, last year with Gordon, you know, just finding a few things that he does really well and finding a few things that he can help you right away with. Because that's, you know, as soon as he gets on the field, he's going to be needed to produce. And if you have two or three routes even where he's doing really well, that's a huge plus given the situation they're in right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, listen, I understand where people are coming from with having low expectations for N'Keal Harry. He's coming in mid-season. He's kind of has to hit the ground running. He's a rookie, and he's also a top Patriots draft pick at wide receiver, which just comes with a stigma of failure, right? You know, right. Guys like Chad Jackson and Aaron Dobson and Taylor Price, and the list goes on and on and on of guys that they've missed in the early parts of the draft at that position. So I understand kind of the hesitation for people with N'Keal Harry. But I think the biggest thing with N'Keal Harry that I really think is going to allow him to at least contribute right away, not necessarily to, you know, be a star right away, but just contribute, is that when you look at this guy, he's an Adonis. Like, he is built. He is massive. He's, for like just a something to look at, you know, perspective, he's about the same size as Josh Gordon. So he's a really, really big guy. And I think that he has an NFL-ready body. So it's not going to be a physical issue with him. It's going to be timing. It's going to be mental, and it's going to be getting on the same page as Brady. But I think that those two can work together to a point where there are three or four routes that N'Keal can run on a regular basis where he's contributing. You know, probably something like a quick screen pass to him or a slant or a dig and probably a fade ball where he's, you know, winning 50-50 and winning contested catches down the field. Those are all elements of his game that I think that he can come in and do pretty early on in his career just because he's got the physical tools to do it. So even if they're ironing out some of the other things. Now, Bill Belichick talked about it today on his conference call, and he gave a little bit of a coy answer, you know, your typical Belichick, we'll see how it goes type thing, where he said they would love to have him out there, but we have to see physically if he's ready to get out there. I think a lot of people really looked deeply, way too deep into that. Right. And started to think about, you know, is he saying that N'Keal Harry can't keep up? Is he saying that he's not healthy enough and they expect him to be healthy at this point or whatever the case may be? I think that all Bill meant was, you got to, all right, rookie, you're going to get the opportunity now. You got to go out there and prove it. You know, now you got to go out there and earn those snaps. We're not going to just hand them to you. That was my interpretation of it, at least. I know that there's a lot of people that took kind of a negative spin, as they always do with that type of thing.
Yeah, but that's how it should be. You know, like, if he's not beating out, you know, Jacoby Myers, put Jacoby Myers out there.
Right.
You know,
right.
So, like, you don't want the guy who's underperforming in practice to be out there in a game. This is not how it works. And that's kind of how, you know, every good football team should be, you know, where you compete. You don't put a guy out there based on their draft status. I don't think that's what Belichick's ever done, and I think the track record is pretty good, you know? Yeah. So, obviously, like, physically, N'Keal Harry is every bit the first-round pick that you want, but if he's not going to produce in practice and stuff like that, then don't put him out there just to put him out there. I will say, though, you know, you want to get him some targets when he is ready. You want to work him in as much as possible because his ceiling is so much higher than a lot of these guys who are going to be on the field. Of course, you know, of course it's, you got to earn it. You know, that's how it works here. It's how it works at every successful organization, program, every level. The guys that earn it, are the guys that get the playing time. And those are the guys that end up playing the best anyway. I think what he said was the right thing.
Yeah, and before we move on quickly, just, you said something about how you want to kind of get him involved even just a little bit, not handing him anything, but just getting him involved. And I think that that's an important thing because when you draft a guy in the first round, it reminds me a lot of Sony last year, where early on in, with Sony against Detroit, against Jacksonville, even at other points early on in the season, then he got nicked up again in Chicago. It wasn't looking like it was going to be very pretty for him as a rookie, but they kept giving him the ball. They kept on giving him the reps. They kept on giving him the opportunity. And then you get the playoff performance that you get and the performance down the stretch that you got out of him. So I think that with the first round pick, there is more leeway, as there should be, than with an undrafted guy like a Jacoby Myers, right, where you let him kind of make some of those mistakes in the beginning and you kind of iron those things out and you keep on going back to him because you've invested in him and because you believe in his talent and you believe in your evaluation of him. So there is kind of that element of it too, is like you're not necessarily calling to force feed him. You're not calling him to get snaps he doesn't earn, but you do have to kind of let him blossom, right? You do have to feed him and let him kind of grow within this offense because you are drafting him in the first round and you are expecting him to be a big part of the offense over the next 4 or 5 years. You know, when you invest like that, that's what you want. So in order to kind of get his production and get his development going, you do have to get him involved a little bit. And I'm really kind of fascinated to see once they have an ability to put at least some things into the playbook that he understands and that he knows and he feels good about, how Josh McDaniels uses him. Because I think that this guy is much more than just a boundary receiver. We saw it in college where he played all over the formation for ASU. So I think that there's going to be opportunities that Josh McDaniels is going to use him in different situations to kind of scheme him open and get him opportunities to catch and run and use his size and his after the catch ability. So it's not all just on him to just beat the guy in front of him every single time. Because I think if they use him in that respect where it's always on him to kind of go one-on-one like Josh Gordon does and just shake somebody or beat somebody over the top, I don't think it's going to look too pretty as a rookie, especially. That's not really his game. That's not really where he shines because the technical details of his route running aren't there yet. The releases, the moves at the top of the route, his route breaks, you know, his ability to set up DBs and make moves and cut and stop on a dime and stuff like that at the top of the route, it's developing. That's an area of his game that needs development. So they're going to have to move him around and get him some free releases, get him some favorable matchups, do that kind of thing to help him out. And I think he can really be a man coverage matchup guy in that way. The last piece of news here before we move on to some bigger things, Jakob Johnson to IR. We don't have to spend 20 minutes on a fullback, although we could probably.
We definitely could.
No fullback again. You know, it sounds like all the expectations from everything that everyone is hearing down there is that it's Harry and it's Wynn as the guys that they're designated to return. They've kind of already made that up in their heads as long as those two guys are healthy enough. So no fullback season, probably the rest of the way for the Patriots here.
Yeah, and I don't know, maybe you
move some Izzo at fullback?
Well, yeah, you can do that.
Yeah.
You know, you can do some H-back stuff. I don't know. The I formation is such a critical package for them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't know. I think Izzo there could work.
Yeah.
But of course, it's a step down, right? Everybody's a step down from Devlin. And yeah. So I think that is part of the – I don't think it's everything, but I think it is part of the equation when you look at some of the running game struggles. But at the end of the day, I think, again, you can get somebody serviceable there. Because I think Johnson wasn't a superstar, but I think he played the role fairly well.
Yeah.
With Watson back, maybe throw Izzo there. It's not the hardest position in the world to teach. I mean, it does have some, it's not simple, but at the same time on a football field, if you get a guy with the right build and willingness to block, you can figure out how to be a fullback. You know, it's not like coming in and, you know, being a left tackle to a quarterback. You know, there's translatable skills for a lot of players on an NFL team that can be a fullback. So, I don't know. Maybe Brandon Bolden. I think Brandon Bolden could do it. He's a just big physical guy. I think Izzo's probably the best choice for it right now.
Yeah, we can talk about Bolden and the weapon that is Brandon Bolden in a second. A four-down player that is Brandon Bolden. But I as much as I think people have, myself included, kind of trashed on Izzo a little bit and are not as high on Izzo right now, I think that almost fullback might be a spot that he could kind of succeed in a little bit more in the blocking game than he has at tight end. Because I think the biggest thing about him right now at tight end is that what they're asking him to do is block edge defenders and defensive ends that tend to be bigger, stronger guys than the guys that he's going to face at the second level as a fullback when he's leading through the hole. Because remember, nowadays, besides the Patriots, really, teams don't have linebackers that are 250 pounds anymore. You know, these linebackers that he's going to face are much smaller. A lot of them are like converted safeties or actually safeties, you know, just jumbo safeties that they're using in the box. So their guys are a little bit smaller. And I think the hardest part about fullback, just talking to Devlin about it a little bit last year, is post-snap recognition, right? Making those split seconds decisions where who's the nearest threat? What is my assignment? You know, where should I really? Sometimes things after the snap don't go as planned. That happens all the time in the NFL. And being able to react to those things post-snap and make those split second decisions are difficult. The other thing I think is difficult is squaring up on guys and really getting a good piece of guys in the hole and not just kind of blowing by them or just getting a piece of their shoulder or something like that, but really getting square and getting a sturdy block into dudes, I think can be a little bit difficult for some players. But I think that's actually something that Izzo, because of the way that they teach their tight ends, has a pretty good amount of experience doing, is getting square and getting his hat on a hat. And really the only thing I think that would have to change so much for him is just that you're seeing the game from a different angle. You know, it's going to be different from coming from the backfield than it is going to be coming from on the line of scrimmage. But I really think that he's got the athleticism. He's got the physical ability to do it. And maybe taking on some linebackers with a head start and with some head of steam is going to be a little bit easier for him to not get tossed around as much at the point of attack as it would be on the line of scrimmage. I don't hate it, honestly, with Watson coming back to play more of like the wide tight end role. You put Izzo as kind of like a move tight end or an H-back, fullback type player. I think he's got potential there.
The other thing about playing fullback that's a little difficult is adjusting to angles, and finding the right side of the guy to get your helmet to. And when you're coming downhill, that can be a little bit more difficult to sort of figure that out. There's something to be said for squaring guys up and really leveling them, but there's also ways to just sort of angle a guy off or sort of wall them off in a way that you would, and if you're say a pulling guard and want to, you know, create a lane. So I think, and like you said, you could scheme different things. I mean, you could put him in as an H-back. I like that idea. It's going to be an adjustment, but you know, I think, you know, it, ever since we sort of understood that Devlin's not going to be there, we already knew that it was going to be this, you know, this transition period, and it's going to take a while. I don't think it's going to be something easily done, but it can be done. It's not like you're losing Brady out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a great point about just kind of how the different angle of what he's going to have to do and the things that are different about fullback versus being an inline tight end. I don't know. I actually just think that he could be better at it than he is at tight end in a lot of ways, especially blocking. All right, let's talk about the offense. That's a decent segue there into the offense. And right now, obviously, I think there's a pretty high level of concern about the way that the group looks right now. And I will not deny that based off the eye test, it hasn't looked pretty at times over the last couple of weeks, especially. Now, based on the statistics, they're actually still doing a pretty decent job of producing offensively. They, as an offense, and this is taking out non-offensive touchdowns, special teams, and defensive touchdowns, they're still averaging 26 points a game. And I understand the competition isn't great, but some of those defenses that they have played, like Pittsburgh, the Jets, Buffalo, those are good defenses. Say what you want about their offenses, but they're playing some decent defenses. So it's not, I would say it's more that they're playing worse offenses than it is that they're playing worse defenses right now. And they've been able to score at a decent rate. So I think that some of the overreaction, some of the kind of hysteria about the offense is a little bit overblown. But there's certainly areas of concern, and you can kind of tell that in some kind of phases of the game and in certain points of games, they're kind of struggling a little bit to find something that works and just find a rhythm offensively.
Yeah, the thing that I've noticed is it seems like teams are saying, all right, we're not going to let Edelman beat us. Find another guy. And there's been a lot of stretches this year where that other guy hasn't emerged. And it's you can sort of tell the frustration with both Brady and Edelman, that, you know, that it sort of takes a while. You know, like the second half of last week's game, I thought you sort of started to find it a little bit again. He got that that seam route. That was big. But if you force Brady to find other guys right now, nobody else is really too dangerous. And I think that's another reason why eventually you want Harry to do something that's dangerous, do something that can attract extra defenders. You know, it's just been a lot of work. You know, yeah. They made good adjustments, I thought, in the second half of the last game, and they moved the ball pretty well. But I just don't think the running game is popping, obviously. And there's reasons for all this. I mean, there's guys who are out, you know, like on the offensive line, you know, that's definitely affecting the running game. I don't think Sony Michel is sort of taking what's given to him, and that's it. You know, it's not like he's sort of taking it, you know, taking something that's 5 yards. If he's given 5 yards, he'll take 5 yards, but he's not taking that and turning it to 10 and 15, yeah. Like some other backs. And, you know, some other people have said this, but like, I'd like to see, Damian Harris, cause he seems like somebody who can make people miss in short spaces with not a lot of great blocking, and he's a pretty decent receiver too. Now, I like the fact that they've started to throw to Michel, because that gives him a little bit more versatility, but they need to see more out of the running back position too, in the running game. Obviously, I think the offensive line takes some of that blame, but you know, the running backs themselves have to play better as well.
Yeah, I think the running backs, it's a great point, because this team is built to have good running backs and to have the running game and the running backs be super productive, not just good, but great for them, and really get a ton of yards out of that group. Right now, they're getting a lot of yards out of certain guys, Brandon Bolden. I think that James White is one of the only players other than maybe Edelman that Brady feels like he can trust in the passing game right now on a down-to-down basis. And you can tell because he's always looking his direction along with Edelman. So I think that James White and Julian Edelman are probably the two guys that Brady feels the best about, and maybe Josh Gordon too at times. But right now, those are the two guys that are the old reliables. And that's fine in a lot of ways, because I do think it's important to remember that most offenses run through one or two guys. You know, it's not like all these other teams in the league. Sometimes I think we think like the other teams in the league are all Kansas City, where they have, you know, three or four guys that they can run the offense through and survive. A lot of teams run the offense through one or two guys. Like that's pretty normal. And when you have a quarterback like Brady, it's really like you're running the offense through three guys, you know, because you're running the offense through him also. So there's some element of that too. But I think that the biggest thing is that I want to talk about the offensive line, because I think the offensive line as a whole is doing okay in pass protection. Their numbers in pass protection are actually nowhere near as bad as people think, which is interesting, because I think some of it is skewed based off of Brady's quick release and the scheme and the ability to get the ball out, and what they're trying to do and function as an offense really helps the offensive line out a lot. But since Marshall Newhouse took over at left tackle, Tom Brady is the least pressured quarterback in the NFL, which based off the eye test, you just wouldn't believe that, right? Like that just doesn't sound right at all. He's only getting pressured on 24% of his dropbacks right now since Marshall Newhouse took over. I think the biggest thing is that's happening is twofold. Is one, Newhouse in particular, his losses are ugly, right? You really, a lot of the time, it's not like he's losing. You know, I think people think that he's losing every other block. It's not. You know, it's probably about 15 to 20% of the time, which is still really high for a guy at that position, but he just doesn't have the foot speed to recover. So when he takes a wrong first step, or he gets caught leaning, or he does get beat to his spot initially, he doesn't have the foot speed to then recover and regain momentum and regain leverage and get back on the block. Once it's over for him, it's over. right? You know, once the guys buy him, once the guy kind of fools him, that's it. That's it's ball game. So a lot of the sacks with him are happening really quickly, and a lot of them are happening ugly. And I think that those things both stand out a lot to people. You know, those really ingrained in your head, where at the end of the day, you look back on that game and you're like, wow, Marshall Newhouse was a real liability. And he only gave up one sack and two hurries, you know, and it's not great, but it's not horrible. It's not like a 2015 Denver situation where they're giving up 20, you know, pressures or something like that a game. It's not that bad. But I think what you're seeing is that some of it is physical, and the fact that Marshall Newhouse is a limited, especially with his foot speed, player to be on the left side and on the blind side. And some of it's mental, because I think a lot of things that we're seeing with the passing game is that everybody else feels like they need to move quicker because the offensive line isn't what it was last year in pass protection, Brady included. And I feel like a lot of it is just like the receivers know they need to get open quickly. Brady knows he needs to get rid of the ball quickly. And that's when you get some of the inconsistencies and some of the kind of just the feeling that it's slothing, the feeling that it's a struggle to even gain a couple of yards. I think comes from the fact that everybody is kind of trying to overcompensate for other people, if that makes sense.
It does. Yeah, and I think the point that you made is really good when you're talking about, like, you got to keep it in some perspective. The offensive line isn't as good as it usually is, but it's not like 2015. It's not a total train wreck out there.
No.
But you're right, and Newhouse's losses are bad.
It's just like he gets caught, like that one sack he gave up last week. He got caught, like, transitioning his weight outside looking for just the turn around the corner, typical edge rush. And the guy just slanted inside him and went right across his face. And once the guy went the wrong way on him, it was over. There's just no ability to move his feet to transition that block.
Also, like, you're not seeing, like, I know that guys are sort of rushing through things, but they're also not, like, getting that open. And so that doesn't help the offensive line either.
Yeah.
You know, you're seeing a lot of throwaways from Brady, you know, and Brady hasn't been his most accurate self either, but, I just honestly think that, you know, the trust factor with this group of receivers outside of, like you said, White and Edelman really isn't there. So guys have to get open more, you know, the line has to protect a little bit better, but right now, if you look at this as a whole, it's really just sort of everything not clicking. It's not really one or two things. It's sort of the whole thing is just sort of off. So right now, you just sort of have to rely on those guys that you know can produce, Edelman, White, you know, and the running game when it is there. But, you know, there's nothing in this offense that's coming easy. Luckily, they have a defense that doesn't need them to score 40 points to win a game.
Well, the defense is also going to outscore most of the offense.
Exactly. At this point, you know? So yeah.
I think, too, before we move on, just the other point that I wanted to make, it's week 7, I guess, now for the Patriots, technically. There's a long way to go. And one thing I know from Patriots teams is that it's never at its best early on in the season. Right. We're not trying to win any Super Bowls in October. So, no, it doesn't look pretty. But I honestly kind of everyone is out there trying to trade for Stephon Diggs and trying to trade for Keenan Allen now and pull off this big blockbuster to kind of help the team on offense. And yeah, that would be great. Listen, that would be awesome. If they trade for Keenan Allen, I'm all for it. No one's saying don't do it. Right. But I do think that if they stay the course and they get their last two first-round picks back and win and N'Keal Harry, and they just keep at it and they keep drilling it with these guys, that the product is going to look much better come December and January than it looks now. Because that's how good teams do it. Good teams build over the course of the season, and you're not at your best at the beginning of the year. And in the past, when the Patriots have been at their best at the beginning of the year, they actually sputter out. Those are the years that they don't usually win the Super Bowl, is because they usually, like 07 or, you know, 2011 or 2010, a lot of those years they came out of the gate. 2015 was another one of those years where the injuries started to pile up on them late, where they were 10-0 in 2015 or whatever it was. right out of the gate and they look like a wagon, and then the war attrition just kind of leans on you, right, and takes some guys out, and then it ends in Denver, which is not what they wanted. I think that there's an element of just give it time, and a lot of these things tend to get a lot better over the course of the season, especially run blocking. I really think that this team in Skarnecki is going to find a way to get things blocked better in the running game. Eventually, it's just going to take a little bit more time than maybe it took last year. It wasn't until last year, until about the Colts game, week 5 or week 6, where that offensive line really started dominating and leaning on teams. So we're right around that time right now. So I think that there just needs to be a little bit of a pause and just wait it out and lean on Brandon Bolden, who's our next topic, just a four down master. I mean, it was pretty incredible watching how much he pretty much took over that Giants game at times, both offensively and defensively. And then obviously the week before, he had the touchdown in Washington on the big throw. So there's just Brandon Bolden's doing it all right now.
And again, if you're talking about guys you can trust out there, think about how long he's sort of been in the system, how well he's liked by everybody on that team.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, you're looking at a guy that has a lot of ability that just doesn't really get a chance often to show it. I mean, just look at that Miami game last year.
Yeah.
You know, that guy, you know, he was explosive, you know? So obviously, like, the guy's on the field a lot for special teams. You know, he's like a pretty physical guy.
Yeah.
That's the thing I like about Brandon is, you know, he never shies away from a hit, no matter where he is, even if he's carrying the ball. And he's been around, you know, like that. There's something to be said for experience in the system, especially when a lot of stuff is not working right now and there's so many new moving pieces. So, I like Brandon. I've always liked talking to him when I was in there. I wish nothing but the best for him.
Yeah, I think there's definitely an element of comfortability with Brady, with McDaniels, with just the whole thing. The whole operation when Bolden's in the game is that, maybe he's not the most explosive, he's not the most dangerous, but they can rely on him being in the right spot. You know, and that wheel route that he caught in Washington is a great example of one of those plays where Brady kind of came back to it backside. He knew he had the matchup on the linebacker, and he threw it out there because he trusted Brandon Bolden was going to be down there, you know, and he was. And I think that some of that familiarity, some of that ability, yeah, he's going to be in the right spot. The other thing is I just can't believe even for 1 year that Bill Belichick let this guy get away, even for one season, because this is such a Belichick player. Like, so he goes and he catches that touchdown in Washington. He runs one in against the Giants early on, and then he blocks a punt. And he creates another touchdown by blocking a punt. Just the four down capabilities is just so Patriots. And it's exactly what they need out of this backfield, too, because they need guys. It's such a deep backfield that in order to get on the field and contribute for all these guys, you have to have some niches, right? You know, James White's is obviously pass catching. Brandon Bolden's is just a Swiss Army knife where he can just do a little bit of everything. Sony Michel is, you know, between the tackles back. Rex Burkhead is kind of one of those, you know, more versatile guys as well. So you really need to have multiple roles and be able to do multiple things well to even get on the field at that spot in the Patriot system. And Bolden is he's just a quintessential Patriot.
Sorry to cut you off, but I think like right now, given what Michelle is not giving them, I'd rather have Bolden carrying the ball.
You're on this side of this take. I like
that. I just kind of feel like you saw it a little bit in the preseason too, about how just sort of violently he hits the hole. I like how Brandon runs the ball. I don't know if he's always looked this way. Just to me, it looks like he's like a confident, violent runner, and he hits the hole hard. Sometimes he runs right into somebody, right? But just right now, I'm a little just sort of not that impressed with what Sony's bringing to the table. I know the line's not blocking perfect and Devlin's out, but like, I feel like Sony, like I said, is only taking what is being given to him. And it's not a terrible thing to have another guy in there. And again, like Harris or somebody, So, yeah.
Yeah, there's a few plays over the last couple of weeks, a few runs where I've seen Sony be a little bit more decisive and make quicker decisions. I think the biggest difference for me between what he was in the playoffs last year to what he's doing right now and talking about Sony is the decision making. It just doesn't seem like he's hitting the hole as hard, and he's not picking the hole as quickly as he was before. So maybe that processing speed's a little bit down. I do wonder if they've thrown a lot more on his plate in year two, because oftentimes in year one, it's like they keep it as basic as they can. The guys like Sony are only running out of a few different formations with a few different blocking schemes. So maybe they've expanded the repertoire a little bit on him this year. So that's why there's a little bit of hesitation. But I don't think that it's so much physical, like he's lost burst or anything like that.
No.
I think it's more the decision making, and it's just taking him a little bit. He's a little bit slow right now with his processing. And that's something that I think we'll certainly like to see kind of speed up a little bit more. Whereas with Bolden, it's just, it's downhill, right? And that's how you got to be in this offense, especially. And when an offensive line isn't creating these, you know, crater-sized holes for you, you got to be more decisive, because the gaps shrink faster, right? The margins are smaller. So if you're not hitting the hole harder, then those things are closing faster, and then you're going to get yourself into trouble quicker if you're not doing that. And I think that that's the processing speed and the ability to see some of those lanes that aren't just the lane that is programmed into the play. Every play has got a spot it's trying to hit, right? Every play has got a point. And sometimes I think that Sony gets so caught up in hitting that point that he doesn't often see some of the openings in other spots of the line. That, I think, is another element that I like to see him be a little bit better at. And there's some runs on tape that I could show that he has done that. There's a backside run against Washington where it was a tight end wham, and he ended up hitting it backside A-gap instead of frontside A-gap or playside A-gap like they wanted him to. But that type of stuff is just not happening often enough. It all comes to me about reading the second level, right? That's what it is for a running back. You expect your offensive line to block the guys on the first level and get that initial kind of push and initial hole. The back's job is to then manipulate the second level and read off those scraping linebackers. What direction are the linebackers flowing in? Which gaps and which holes are they coming down to play? And then making a cut off of those to the space that they're not in. You know, that's when those running backs really go ahead and turn like the runs that you're talking about, turning 5-yard runs into 10 or 15-yard runs. If you're not going to be Deion Lewis or Barry Sanders, you're just going to jump cut everybody out of the way. You got to be that guy. You know, yeah. You got to be the guy that controls the second level at all times and sees the flow of the linebackers and the flow of the defense and is able to really hit those cutback lanes and hit those openings a little bit faster than what they're getting out of Sony right now. So I think that's kind of the guy that I would love for Sony to just sit down and watch for like 10 hours a day is Frank Gore. Because Frank Gore he is Sony, right? He's built, he's thick, he's got good contact balance, he's got good initial burst, but he's not a wiggle guy. He's not a jump cut guy. He's not a guy that makes people miss in a phone booth. He's a guy that is just a master at his craft, you know, and his ability to set up second level defenders, manipulate linebackers, and kind of show them one thing and then actually do another thing. It's kind of like when Brady stares down a receiver when he actually means to throw it to another guy. It's like using your eyes to manipulate guys. You can do that as a running back too, and that's something that Frank Gore is really good at that I think Sony needs to add to his game to kind of take that next step and get the ball rolling back in a good direction. We skipped Julian Edelman because we got it kind of lost up in all the running game O-line talk. But he does have back-to-back 100-yard games. And I think that we're getting to the point now with Edelman where league-wide and nationally, media-wise, maybe a little bit underrated, I think, at this point. That guy is – not only is he beating double teams on a pretty regular basis when they're thrown his way, but just the ability to – the route running. I can post – every single week there's a route that he runs that I can post on Twitter that's just sick. And this week it was the double move against the double team where he kind of like froze the world and those two guys bid on it and he just went by two guys. He like put it on pause and then ran down by two Giants defensive backs. He's an incredible route runner and an incredible receiver.
Yeah, and like you said, every team from here on out and starting, I think, I don't know when it started, but it was early in the season. Teams are trying to take him away first. And like obviously when Antonio Brown was out there, he was getting some single coverage. But other than that, teams are sending at least two guys at them, either bracketing them or, you know, to the left or the right. You know, there's extra attention being paid to Edelman right now. And I think, like, early on, it starts to work. And then in the second half, it stops working.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think, and like you said, his route running has always been exceptional. I really liked that seam route he hit, because, you know, that's not a typical Edelman play.
He beat him on a double move on a vertical route.
And there were two guys.
Not an Edelman route.
Yeah, not an Edelman route, and there were two guys. And I think, in my opinion, I'm not in his head, but I don't think that was the initial route. I think that's what he saw.
Yeah.
And found the space, and that's why I thought it was so impressive. You know, there are two guys pretty much assigned to him, and I think they were taking away sort of the horizontal stuff, and he saw space and raced out. And I thought he and Brady sort of had that connection to just sort of go up and take a much more un-Edelman like play. And I think, you know, when you show that, and you show that he can do that, that makes him even tougher to defend, because now teams are going to have to worry about that too. And again, any seam route without Gronkowski is welcome in this offense, you know, because that's what Gronkowski did so well.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think, you know, obviously he's, you know, to see a guy continue to get open against all this attention and to, you know, honestly, the guy's got to be in a lot of pain too. So, and his toughness has never been in question either. But right now, he's their most valuable skill player, other than Brady, for sure.
Yeah, he's the way that, you know, most teams are either bracketing him, like we saw on that double move against the Giants. The Giants actually, I think, bracketed him more than maybe any other team that I've saw, which is, you know, ironic just because of the coaching by the Giants defense was actually pretty good. They just didn't have the players to kind of hold it together for four quarters. And they had a decent plan to bracket and play man coverage everywhere else and to force the Patriots to beat them with somebody other than Edelman. And early on in the game, the only matchup that they really had was their backs on their backers. You know, that was really all that they had to kind of beat them. And then Edelman kind of went to work on a couple of plays. But over the last couple of weeks, I mean, Josh Norman, Jackrabbit Jenkins, those guys have just gotten torched by Edelman. And they just really, it's what I think is really fun to watch about him is kind of the element to, like you were saying, about him having now kind of a vertical element in that one route. He sets himself up and he's always so flattened and kind of straightforward on the defensive back and squared up that he can go left or right at any time.
Yes.
And that is so difficult, especially when he's inside the formation a lot, playing out of the slot, is that if you're a DB, you need to cover the whole field with him. And you can't just sit on him making one cut and going in one direction or just going vertical or just going across the field, because he can just as easily cut it out on you. So you have to be able to have that element of there's a very much of an unpredictability element with Edelman that isn't always there with guys because of how good he is in his stems at squaring up defensive backs. And then also when he gets past guys, he doesn't get past you and then make his cut right away. He kind of re-stems it and he gets past you a little bit so that you're still kind of on his back, right? And he just kind of holds there for a second and then he makes his cut. So he's never giving anything away in his routes, and he can go either direction so easily. So that, I think, is really an element of his game that makes, even against doubles, because what the Giants are trying to do is just an inside-out bracket. One guy's got him if he goes inside. One guy got him when he goes outside, and they were sitting on that inside-out bracket on that play, so he went over the top,
exactly.
And he just split him. And that's one element of what they've been doing against him. The other thing that they've been doing against him is they have the safety rotating down and just cutting him off when he comes across the field. That's what the Bills did a ton of that was really effective against the Patriots, was just cutting those crossers with the safety rotating down from a deep part of the field. And just that crossing route that's what Edelman's embraced bread and butter, is just Edelman running an over route across the middle of the field. And if you can get that safety to cut it, it gets a little bit harder. But now Edelman, I think, is getting to the point where he's anticipating those things coming. He's anticipating the guy cutting. So now he's readjusting his route and kind of running around it, you know, and he's going to say, all right, if you're going to cut off the over route, I'm actually going to just straighten this thing out and run like more of a post and just run it right behind you. And I'm going to hopefully be open behind you. So there's just so many the mind games that happens between him and the DBs right now is like next level stuff.
Right.
It's so much more than just physical.
Right. Well, that's, you know, that's this offense, right? You make a pre-snap read and then you start your route and then you find out what the defense is doing and you run to the open space. And I know Brady took some heat for saying, you know, these other guys got to, you know, he didn't come out and say it, but he said, you know, I can't do everything. But, you know, that's who else in the wide receiver core is capable of doing all that right now?
Yeah.
To the level, especially that Edelman's doing. And so I think that's a bit of the frustration. But, you know, that's what Edelman's so good at. Not only is he good at the mind game of it, his body control, and sort of being able, like you said, to take either side or now go vertical or whatever, you know, that's, you know, that makes him almost impossible to defend unless, like we've been talking about, you know, sending multiple guys, you know, taking away areas on the field that he's always going to. But you really have to give him extra attention. And so, you know, maybe by the end of the season, somebody else will really emerge as somebody who can free him up to be single covered, which makes it impossible. You know, like, is there a single guy that you can stick on him and sort of shut him down for an entire game?
In man coverage, I don't think so.
No.
I think the Bills could probably zone it the whole game and figure it out, you know, by kind of like closing him in. Like, so you're not actually dedicating a double to him, but you're kind of bracketing him in zone coverage. Maybe the Bills might be one of the only defenses that I can think of that could actually pull off, you know, not dedicating multiple guys to him every single play.
Yeah. And listen, I mean, not to go back to this, if you remember that Dolphins game when they had Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
He was getting single covered that game. A lot of guys were getting single covered that game because Brown was getting that attention. And even, you know, Brown wasn't always even getting double teamed because there were so many guys. Yeah, that is an adjustment. Now, I do think this offense is still good enough with the guys they have to be effective. It's just going to take time. And like you said, it doesn't happen right away always. And, you know, it feels like on both sides of the ball after their bye week, they figure a lot of stuff out. There's a lot of self-scouting that goes on and they sort of figure out what's best for them. I think you're going to see that again.
Yeah, I agree. And before we move on here to the Jets, we want to gush about one more Patriots player that's playing damn good right now. And that is Stephon Gilmore, who kind of on Thursday night took over that game a lot of ways defensively and just announced to the whole league that he's the best corner in the league. I think, you know, not that if it needed any discussion. And I think the thing with Steph that's so impressive is how patient he is with his technique and how much he trusts both his physical tools and his teammates to help him out. And he's never out of control on a football field. And it's just, I don't know if I can, that's such a big part of playing corner is eye discipline and body control. Because if your eyes are all over the place or if your technique is all over the place, you can be exposed really quickly in this league. And he's always seems to just be right in this right spot every single time. Even when he gives up catches, it's not because he's not in the vicinity, right? It's just like the guy catches it in front of him, or that's what Terry McLaurin did a lot against him, just catching, you know, little slants and in cutting routes just right in front of his face, and then he just makes a tackle and you live to play another play.
Yeah, you know, cornerback is such a tough position because how many positions on the field, especially on defense, are you not allowed to touch the guy half the time you come, you know?
Yeah.
And pass interference, in my opinion, at the NFL level is so difficult for a cornerback now because of the reviews. Which I think the referees have done actually a pretty good job of not making sure that the ticky-tack ones get through. I've liked that. But still, like, it's so easy to get called for pass interference in the NFL. And his ability to know when to break on the ball and not interfere with the receiver, I think is probably the best in the league. I mean, he just his anticipation and, like you said, his eyes are just exceptional. And guys aren't just getting separation either. When you see another team throwing at Gilmore, before the ball gets there, you know it's a mistake. You know, yeah. Don't you get that feeling that, like, if they're throwing at Gilmore, then it's either an incompletion or it's just the wrong decision. Yeah. So I think you saw the Revis tweet. It was Revis, right?
Yeah.
You said Gilmore's the best corner in the NFL right now. I mean, I don't think Revis is a Patriots homer, even though he played here.
Yeah,
you know,
he was a mercenary when he played here. It was one year.
Yeah. So, and the guy, I mean, if you're gonna get an endorsement from anybody who played the position recently, that's the one you want. So, you know, Gilmore's playing at such a high level. This is the guy that they wanted when they initially got him, and he had that sort of rough first year here. So, yeah. I mean, indicative of the entire defense, you get playmakers all over the field, but he's a superstar.
Yeah, eye discipline. It's so important for that position. A lot of guys just, they get caught either looking back at the quarterback or looking for the ball too early or just reacting to things that wide receivers do to trick them, right? Like little hesitation moves or little fakes with their shoulders or their eyes or whatever the case may be. And you see it all the time in this league that guys take the bait. They take the bait and they can't help themselves. And Gilmore's ability to take what he sees on film and kind of, honestly learns what those little tricks are by the guys that he's going to go up against, where he's studying on film, like what's their little twitch, what's their little move that they use at the top of their route to get open, and when do I know when it's fake and when it's real, you know? And the ability to read route breaks and read guys and what they're going to do and what their intentions are, along with that eye discipline to play and the ability to just stay true to his technique and just believe in it. Like, he believes in his drill work and his technique and what he's been taught and what he's drilled into himself so much that he just does it the same every single rep. And I was talking to one of his coaches, actually, Dre Bly, who he's been working with a lot in the offseason. I'm sure you remember Dre Bly from his playing days. Dre Bly is now the University of North Carolina DB's coach, cornerback's coach, actually. And Gilmore is from South Carolina, so he goes down there in the off season and he works out with Dre Bly in his time that he stays at home during the off season. And Dre Bly just said that the biggest thing that separates Gilmore, he thinks, from other corners is not only work ethic and his ability to just drill home technique week in, day out, day in and day out, but also he said that because he's long and he's a bigger guy, that a lot of people don't think that he has quick feet and that he has don't think that he would look like a good type of guy that has good change of direction skills, but just his smoothness and his movements and his ability to change directions and change on a dime and really read quarterbacks and be able to react to plays like that, I think is a big thing that really does separate him from some of these other guys that we see out there. And go if you're a young corner, just go watch him play and just like try to be like him. Cause like there's other guys that I've seen at that position that win in other ways, but I don't know if I've seen somebody as technically sound as Gilmore. He's just a clean, smooth operator. All right, they're just showing highlights of Sam Darnold on Monday Night Football. Probably
what a great transition
at halftime. So we can transition now. We are going to do a full show on the Jets later in the week and previewing this game because maybe it's a real game. I mean, they did just beat Dallas. They held on to beat Dallas, if we're being honest. But they did just beat Dallas. But quickly, what were your impressions of Sam Darnold? Because I think that he's kind of the hot topic at this point.
I love him.
I've always loved him. You know me.
I remember did we do a draft stuff on him?
I'm sure. Even though you know where that they were going to take him.
Yeah, I mean, the guy. Like, I mean, everybody sort of remembers that Rose Bowl against Penn State.
Yeah,
where he was
his coming out party for
sure. He was dealing, man.
Yeah,
and I think last week's game again showed you that he's still the same guy when it comes to turnovers. There's always at least sort of one play where he either fumbles or throws a bad pick. That was a bad pick. That sort of allowed Dallas to get back in it. But honestly, he's a playmaker. I like his arm talent. I think, you know, you mentioned this, but like when things break down a little bit, he's got a good ability to make things happen anyway. I obviously don't think the Jets have like the best talent around him when it comes to skill players. They've got some guys. I mean, Le'Veon Bell's still good. Robbie Anderson has made some plays. But I still think, like we were talking the other day about draft, if the Jets get a chance to draft somebody like a Jerry Jeudy out of Alabama or any one of those guys, that's who they should take. He needs a few more weapons, especially against this defense. But I think he's capable of hurting them for sure.
I think that's the biggest thing. Even last year in that game, if you remember, he made a couple of like wow big time throws to Deontay Burnett, kind of under pressure, like rolling out and just dropping dimes on the sideline. The issue was, and it's going to be the same issue this time around, is that he just doesn't have enough guys that can separate against the secondary. You know, Robbie Anderson gets erased from the earth every single time he plays Stephon Gilmore. That's not going to be a close matchup. I think Anderson's got something like 3 catches on like 17 targets against Gilmore in the last 3 or 4 games that the Patriots and the Jets have played since Steph got here. So it's utter domination when those two play and not in the Jets' favor. Is Jamison Crowder going to be able to separate it consistently down to down against a John Jones or a Jason McCourty? Probably not. So where's the playmaking coming from? Where's that guy coming from? I don't know. But I think the biggest difference between watching Darnold and watching Luke Falk, among a lot of things, because that's a huge difference.
Yeah.
Is the ability to create plays under pressure. And I think that that's such a big issue with this Jets team, is that their offensive line, especially in pass protection, is bad. It's been horrible all year long. They're 30th right now in PFF's rankings in pass protection, 30 out of 32, of course. So under pressure, Luke Falk had a 12.0 passer rating, 12.12, and a completion percentage of 44. Darnold, in the games that he's played, completion percentage is 62%, and the passer rating is over 91. So that swing, and we saw it on Sunday against Dallas, even when he's not like under a ton of pressure, but just the ability to slide up in the pocket or step around a guy or get outside the pocket a little bit or climb and find those little soft spots in the pocket to give himself the space that he needs to make downfield throws, it just opened up the whole offense. It just made that whole offense actually run on time and be able to create explosive plays, because Darnold, when the pressure came, it wasn't a complete train wreck, because Darnold was able to kind of mask it and save the situation a little bit. I don't know if he's got enough bullets in the gun to do that and consistently move the ball against this Patriots defense. Probably not. And the other thing that you said that was really key with him is that he's going to throw at least one pick in this game.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's at least
fumble
one,
it or
yeah,
something.
There's one turnover that's going the other direction in this game for sure. So can he protect the ball, and can his receivers create enough plays for him, give him enough chances to make plays down the field? That's probably going to be the difference and the reason why they're not going to, you know, win this game or score a ton of points on offense. But I think that Darnold has shown time and time again that the guy is just a playmaker. Like he's just got that ability to just make downfield throws from different arm angles, from different places in the pocket, on the move, elude pressure and make plays with his feet that these other quarterbacks that they've replaced him with when he's injured just have no chance of doing. So this game in itself is going to be way better than the first time around just because of that.
100%. It kind of makes you wonder what would happen if it was switched, if the Bills had Darnold and, you know,
instead
the
of
Jets.
Josh.
Yeah, because I think Darnold's a much better quarterback. Obviously, he's much more accurate.
But
the margin of error is just too small with the talent disparity in this game for Darnold to actually, and the Jets to actually win this game, in my opinion. The Jets have a pretty good defense, though. I think there's potential turnover stuff coming from that end of it as well. I really like, I've always liked Jamal Adams. I think everybody does.
Yeah.
And they've got some guys who can create pressure too. So, I thought their defense needs just an offense that can be keep it off the field a little bit and score some points. I don't know. The Jets could cover. I don't think the Jets can win. But I think they can cover whatever that line is. Because I think Darnold has a, chance of keeping them in the game long enough before he makes that, big turnover.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a game where the Patriots go 3 and out 7 or 8 times or whatever it was in Buffalo. But if this game was 17-10, 16-10, something like that, I wouldn't be shocked just the way the Patriots offense is playing. This Jets defense was 10th in DVOA going into this Dallas game where they played shut down one of the better offenses. I know that Dallas had a lot of injuries to, Tyron Smith and Amari Cooper, but they did a very good job against this. This is a legitimate Jets defense. This defense is top 10 in a lot of statistical categories, or top 10 in DVOA. And this is a defense that's been good pretty much all year, not just, a couple of games here and there, but pretty consistent. The first quarter against the Patriots, the first matchup, there was 2 or 3 coverage busts that they had that were just really egregiously bad that cost them big yards. Like the play action pass to Ryan Izzo cost them like 45 yards because Jamal Adams thought it was a run and didn't cover his man, and they were in man to man and the dude was wide open. The touchdown to Philip Dorsett, the Patriots just fooled everybody on play action. There's like 2 or 3 breakdowns like that. And once they straightened that out at halftime and got everybody on the same page, they pretty much shut down the Patriots offense the rest of the game. So that Jets defense is playing pretty well. I think Greg Williams gets a bad rap, as he should, for the stuff that he did in New Orleans with Bounty Gate and all that kind of stuff, which is no place for that. But as a schemer, he's a pretty good DC. And he knows what he's doing, and he does some different things that have confused the Patriots in the past. But like I said, we're going to do a whole show on this. So we can save the rest of it for later in the week. There was one, everybody that listens to us religiously knows that we're big draft guys. There's one draft element that you wanted to throw out there that I'm going to let you take from here that I think is really interesting, just to give people a little bit of a preview of what's to come in the offseason.
Okay. Everybody gets excited with quarterbacks. And especially this year, there's a lot of guys who came into this season with a lot of hype, and guys have gained more. And so I love looking at mock drafts so far out. There's so far to go. But one of them I saw, I think it was a Fan-Sided or something. I forget where I saw it. But they did a full first-round mock, and they had Jalen Hurts from Oklahoma being picked at 32 by the New England Patriots. Now, I don't think that's likely. And I'm not sure it's even likely that Jalen Hurts, even though he's in the Heisman discussion, is necessarily a first-round draft pick. He did go to Oklahoma, though. He is at Oklahoma right now. He used to be at Alabama. And there's pretty good track record right now of guys who went to Oklahoma and being highly picked. Now, there is some of that pushback now that you're starting to see that, especially with the regression of Mayfield, that, okay, maybe once these guys leave Oklahoma, they're not playing in an offense that that allows receivers to get open as much, and maybe they look a little bit better in college than they would in the pros, and there's something to be said for that for sure. That said, there's other guys that will kind of fall maybe into the middle of the round that, who knows, maybe the Patriots feel like this is the year that they want to, maybe they don't feel like Stidham's the next guy. Who knows, but I found it interesting that that's even something that people are considering, like a Jalen Hurts, at that spot.
Yeah. You're just quitting on Stidham here. So Stidham, 2 months ago, Stidham was the heir apparent. Not saying you said that, but just, that was kind of the narrative. I think the interesting thing about Jalen Hurts is two things. One, my friend Alex Barth, friend of the program, he is a huge Alabama fan, and he tells me time and time again how smart of a dude Jalen Hurts is. and just how he's like a coach on the field, and a lot of people that if his NFL career at the time, it didn't sound like the NFL career was going to happen as the way that it is now. You know, maybe he could have been a backup in the league or something like that, but now he seems like he's going to get a legitimate chance. But at the time, Alex would always say that someday he's going to be like an offensive coordinator or head coach, or, you know, that he's got that kind of football brain. And even talking, you know, last year with Tua, him backing up Tua, you could tell how much of a crutch and how much of a help he was to Tua to have him in the quarterback room with him. I think that the one thing, you know, the two things with Lincoln Riley in Oklahoma. First thing, one of Lincoln Riley's, probably his golden rule, is that if your system isn't quarterback friendly, then you have a shitty system, right? So he makes that system in Oklahoma as quarterback friendly as maybe any system in all of football at any level. You know, it's so easy in terms of the reads, in terms of what the picture is presented to you. He makes it as easy as physically possible for a really difficult position, so that it gets to the point where those guys can just be athletes and just make throws. And it's not so much thinking as it is just going out there and doing. So that part of it, I think, is one element of that, which also, you know, would suggest that it might be difficult to translate that to the next level if you don't have a Lincoln Riley type coach. The other thing I think that Lincoln Riley does really well with his quarterbacks, amongst a lot of things, is drilling fundamentals and getting guys to really clean up their footwork as quarterbacks. I think Baker, Kyler, and now Jalen Hurts look like totally different people under Lincoln Riley in terms of their fundamentals and their just their core mechanics as a quarterback than they did in their first stops or in the times that we saw them play before they got to the Lincoln Riley. So that element of it too, I like in terms of Hurts, like where his kind of lower body is right now in terms of his mechanics to what it was last year or the year before that with Alabama. It's whatever Lincoln Riley does for quarterback drills, everybody should go watch an Oklahoma practice and just steal all of his drills, because he just gets his quarterbacks just become so technically sound that that's why these guys are going, even though they're kind of unconventional guys. You know, Baker is not big. Kyler Murray is really not big, maybe mini for an NFL player, but it doesn't matter because they're so fundamentally sound and they're so physically gifted. I wouldn't give up on Baker. I think that
Baker has something
underneath it. You know, I think he's got that drive to want to be better and want to get better. Maybe give up on Freddie Kitchens, but I wouldn't give up on Baker quite yet.
Yeah, and the other thing about Jalen, he's underrated, I think, a lot of times, because, like, if you think about that Georgia game,
yeah, it was a great game
last year with Alabama. You know, Tua came out. Tua's for as good as a prospect as Tua is, I'm not saying he's not a great prospect. He's got injury history. He's got real injury history that Hurts really doesn't have.
Yeah.
And the other thing about Hurts that I love is that the guy has those kind of tree trunk legs and almost a running back build. So he's another guy that has gotten better about, you know, throwing and stepping up in the pocket. When he was at Alabama, when the pocket collapsed, he'd take off and run. He can still do that, but I think he's better now at being more patient with his reads. And again, that's another probably Lincoln Riley thing. But again, this is a guy that can make plays. When we were talking about Darnold just now, you know, the Hurts is obviously not a statue. He can make plays with his legs. He can extend plays. And as smart as he is, he's also got a good, just sort of instinctual feel for where the play is going and what can happen with. Now, we're spending a lot of time on a guy that will probably not get picked by the New England Patriots, but it is just interesting to see that somebody out there doing the draft stuff has him pegged for that. And he does have kind of that Patriots mold in terms of, you know, his mental makeup and all that stuff. I think that's something to watch.
Yeah, and that's what we do. You know, I once the draft stuff starts coming out, you and I just lose control of any type of time frame.
Yes, 100%.
Before we sign off here, though, and get to teases and all that stuff, I do have to shout out our guys at betonline.ag. football season is in full swing. Get into the game with our exclusive sports betting partners, betonline.ag. Sign up today to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit to start betting college or professional ball. Every spread, every total, every winner or loser, straight bet, parlay, or tease your way through the season. You can even bet on wild proposition bets, such as, will the Dolphins win a game this season? They lost to Washington. That was probably their one chance. So maybe they won't win a game. Get the fastest to market odds, updates, and payouts with our new sportsbook partners, betonline.ag. Head over to our website today or use your mobile device to join and use promo code CLNS50 to receive your 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. And now that we got that out of the way, what is going on with Mass Varsity? Is there anything you want to tease?
There's a lot of stuff. I think, this weekend's going to be interesting because Harvard is playing at Holy Cross. Those are two of the better 1AA teams in New England. Holy Cross has got a really nice win over UNH, which looks better and better every week. Harvard's lost their opener to San Diego, but has won every game since. But their schedule will get a lot tougher as the season goes on. But also there's a great podcast up, another one with me and myself and Matt Feld. We hit on a lot of high school and college, local college stuff. And that's up there on our Twitter page at Mass Varsity. So check that out for sure.
Awesome. On CLNSmedia.com, right now I have 10 things after the game. I've been waiting. The coaches film for Thursday night games apparently doesn't drop until all the other ones drop on Monday night, late tonight. So it's probably out just about now. So they don't give us a head start, which is a little bit of a bummer, but definitely start grinding on that. Probably write something on Julian Edelman because I'm not done gushing about him yet. And over the weekend, I will also have something on Stephon Gilmore. I mentioned I spoke to Dre Bly, also talked to Steph for a good 10 minutes in the locker room last week, just about everything. From his preparation to success under the Patriots and what changed from Buffalo and what changed from those first 4 weeks of the season, his first year with New England, and just all sorts of really good stuff from him. It's always really cool to like talk to a guy that's in such a zone like that, you know, that's playing so well out of his mind. You just kind of try to like climb into his head and figure out what's going on in there. And how he's been able to do this. So I'm really looking forward to writing that one and sharing that all with you guys. And then on Monday night, the whole crew, I believe, will be in New York in the Meadowlands for Monday Night Football. Me, Trag, Sierra, Alex Barth, as I mentioned him twice on this podcast already, which is way too much. And so we'll have you all covered down in the Meadowlands for Monday Night Football. Adam and I will be back later in the week. We're going to try to do two pods this week and get a nice preview pod in about the Jets, because I do think we have a mini game here. I'm going to call it a game because I want to see a competitive football game for the Patriots. So until then, signing off for Adam Kirchen, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.